Our next speaker is Dr. Elfriede Merk, who, as I mentioned before, is presently stationed in Beijing and associated with the Palace Museum. She is perhaps best known outside the scholarly world for her work, Poetry and Painting in Sung China, The Subtle Art of Dissent. But I also have to say that she is well known amongst at least Chinese scholars for her hospitality and generosity to people coming to Beijing. She is widely admired and liked, a combination that is not usually difficult to achieve. So we're fortunate today in having her give the second address.
Thank you so much. Oh, that's very kind of you. Now, Professor Wu has been talking about reading various kinds of absence. I want to talk about the absence of leaves. I'm proposing that through the image of deciduous leaf, and in some cases the absence of it, the media of painting could convey strong sentiments, some political, some personal. I'm not sure what I'm going to press here. Is it the red one?
No, it's the four. If you point it at it and press that one.
Oh, okay. Okay, my tentative theory is that visual and verbal clues in painting worked among educated peers because throughout their lives they cultivated the habit of extrapolating many implications from minimal clues. In lodging complaints about government, society, and life, the indirection was useful in that it provided a safe way to vent personal opinions. Like Professor Wu, I'm eager to have your comments and questions to help refine this argument. So what was the message implied by the image of falling leaves, or no leaves? For more than a millennium, falling leaves appeared in Chinese literature with consistently somber effect. The minimal meaning was autumn going into winter, life force diminished, the threat of death. The indirect complaint, however, was that worthy men had been displaced by incompetence. How could a frail autumn leaf be an image for the principled man? A principled man was more often compared to a pine tree that does not change color in adversity. That was from the Analects. Or compared to bamboo. Here you see bamboo. Oh, let's see. Does this have the little red? Yes, bamboo. And bamboo leaves. The metaphor for the falling leaf allows an author to communicate that at times even the most principled man was overwhelmed by circumstances in the face of forces out of his control, dynastic change or gross evil, for example. A principled man may feel as vulnerable as a dry leaf before the wind. The set of meanings that inform the falling leaves as an image of the superior man, the principled man, in adversity, principled man, superior man, all are translations for Junze. What, you can't hear me. Okay. Is that better? No. That's not the microphone. Oh. Oh, okay. So I just have to speak up. Okay. Good. Okay. The set of meanings that inform falling leaves as an image of the superior man, the Junze, in adversity, come from the commentaries to the Nine Songs, the Lady of the Xiang River. The emperor's daughters descend, ah, the northern bank. This is a kind of poem that is typical of 3rd century BC, BCE, and has this empty character in the middle of the line. The distant gaze makes me anxious, wavering, ah, autumn wind, Dongting's waves ah, tree leaves fall. Knowing the meaning imposed on these lines is essential to understanding their use in poetry and painting. As early as the Han Dynasty, the Eastern Han Dynasty, the first two lines were interpreted as an allegory for a loyal minister seeking a worthy ruler. This interpretation evolved from the legend that the sage King Shun died in the south and was buried in southern Hunan. The ladies of the Xiang were said to be his faithful wives, the daughters of King Yao, who went to the south in search of him. It was said that when news of his death reached them, they cried so bitterly that their tears permanently spotted the local bamboo. They drowned themselves in the Xiang River, where their discontented spirits continued to roam. The frequency of quotations of the lines on leaves falling into the waves of Dongting was not due to these legends alone, but also to later commentaries. The Eastern Han scholar Wang Yi saw a disturbing allegory in the autumn wind blowing leaves into the waves. "This is to say," he said, "great men govern anxiously, and people worry. What's more, worthy men have been injured. Some say that because Chu Yuan saw the autumn wind rising and leaves falling, he grieved that the year was coming to an end, and he was getting old." Early in the 8th century, five scholars wrote a commentary to the Wenxuan anthology and submitted it to Emperor Minghuang, who reigned for almost half a century in the 8th century. On the meaning of leaves falling into the waves of Dongting, they were even more explicit. "It is a metaphor for petty men managing affairs and, therefore, worthy men being cast aside." Wang Yi's worthy men suffering injury had become worthy men being displaced by amoral Xiaoren. If the escalation of the rhetoric seems extreme, it was not arbitrary. The annotators were following what seems to have become a pattern of usage during the Six Dynasties and early Tang. I'm skipping the examples of poetry, there are many, but want to, because people's careers were often ruined, it seems, but want to mention that by the end of the Ming Dynasty, the falling leaf and unjust punishment had become so closely associated that a poem bemoaning a damaged career could be called a falling leaf poem. Here we have a more personal example. A young woman looks up to a wutong leaf falling from the poem inscribed above her. Wutong, by this time, 1621, the Xinyo year, had become a rebus for "we are one." That is, wutong leaf sounds like wutong, we are one. In painting, there were at least three visual strategies. So forget this example, because although it's a falling leaf poem, it's not relevant to our set of meanings. In painting, there were at least three visual strategies by which artists evoke this cluster of meanings. That is, the sorrow at not finding an enlightened ruler, and the waste of good talent, the loss of good men. The visual strategies are exemplified by this painting and one by Zhao Mengfu. Then, secondly, depicting autumn leaves drifting down or already on the ground. That's the rarest. Depicting, and third is depicting the Lady of the Xiang with or without her sister, the consorts of Shun. Now, for the first strategy, relying solely on literary allusions, I offer you two examples. This one by this one that has a text by Chao Buzhi for another painting, and a Zhao Mengfu painting. So, in the 11th century, the scholar, official, and renowned poet Chao Buzhi wrote about a painting entitled Catching Fish. Not necessarily this painting, although it may have been. That was attributed to the Tang poet and official Wang Wei. Chao Buzhi described in detail a landscape on paper. This one is on silk. It is now presumably lost, but his description corresponds very closely in composition and in motifs to the landscape on silk, early snow along the river. In addition to the detailed description, Chao Buzhi wrote about the ideas that he saw in the painting, Catching Fish. Quote, "Wang Wei was a, sub, a superbly subtle poet, so his paintings have an abundance of ideas. Today, people trying to emulate him in writing or in painting do not succeed. This painting leads me to think of the words of the man of Chu: "The emperor's daughters descend the northern bank. Their distant gazes make me feel anxious. Wavering, ah, autumn wind, Dongting's waves, ah, tree leaves fall." Thinking of this, like the painting, its words seem to bring Dongting and the Xiang River before my eyes. End quote. Chaobuzhi's quotation of the lines of the Lady of the Xiang allow the knowledgeable reader to think of the commentary and thereby to link the painting to the theme of the superior talent being wasted while petty-minded men manage affairs. In the Zhaogan hand scroll that survives today, we do not see leaves falling, only the absence of leaves here on these branches. The hand scroll features a fisherman hard at work in a light snow. In contrast to the fishermen's simple but physically demanding lives, the official on horseback here and his wife travel by donkeys. They hunker down, holding sleeves to their mouths against the frigid wind. Chaobuzhi criticized contemporary events more directly. He praised fisherfolk as hardworking, frugal, and free of avarice. They have none of the marketplace's idea of fighting for selfish profit, he wrote. Allusions to talent, neglected, is found in another painting. It was created by the erudite scholar Zhao Mengfu. A member of the Song imperial clan, Zhao Mengfu was aware of his abundant talents by the time the Mongols swept away his family's dynasty. For the first 10 years of the Yuan dynasty, he remained in reclusion. But his poetry reflects a gradual process of accommodation to the idea of serving the Mongol government. In 1286, he accepted an invitation to serve, eliciting condemnation from Song loyalists. Once in office, he discovered that being a southern Chinese was a liability, and that the Mongol court gave preference to those of non-Han descent. Zhao Mengfu reflected on the problem of loyalty versus service in poetry and painting. This small hanging scroll, Eastern Mountain by Dongting Lake, is painted in mellow colors with red autumn foliage. On the painting, Zhao wrote a quatrain in the style of the Chuzi: "Dongting's waves, ah." If you know, then you'll say, "Mu ye xia," mountains ominously tall. So he thwarts our anticipation. Upon reading the first four characters, anyone familiar with the Lady of the Xiang poem would automatically supply the rest of the line: "Tree leaves fall." Those who knew the annotations to the Chuzi could immediately sense that Zhao Mengfu's poem was alluding to a distressing situation. Other allusions make clear that he was confident of his ability to serve, but felt thwarted in this ambition. Zhao's fourth line returns the poem to the incomplete allusion of the first line: "My insignificant ambitions, ah, a windblown leaf." In the face of external forces, he is as helpless as a leaf in the wind to determine his own direction. That seems to be the pattern. In the painting itself, the motif most easily connected to the phrase, a windblown leaf, is the little boat on the face of the river. Okay, the second, perhaps the rarest of the visual strategies, is my category number two, the direct depiction of leaves in motion or having fallen. As mentioned above, there was a convention of equating the principled man with the pine and the bamboo rather than deciduous leaves. This preference is reflected in an unusual 12th century fan that shows a gentleman with a staff pausing on a path. He is listening intently to the sound of wind, perhaps to gauge, as the Tang Dynasty official Han Yu said, whether friends are crying out to the glory of the state or crying out due to their own misfortune. In this painting, the wind is not blowing down deciduous leaves, but instead bamboo leaves that normally stay on their stalks through the harshest winter. The pine and bamboo alert the viewer that it is the superior man who, it's superior men who are suffering misfortune. Beyond the path, in the vague middle ground, we can see a duck paddling in choppy water. It prompts us to think of the complete set of literary allusions: strong wind, leaves blown down, the waves of Dongting. The innovative combination of motifs not only communicates that talented men are being cast aside, but also through bamboo leaves, it hints that it is unnatural. Late in the 12th century, a situation developed in which the falling leaf imagery would have been relevant. In 1194, Zhao Ruyu guided the state through a serious succession crisis, only to fall afoul of Han Tuozhou, an ambitious man of little education but great connections. In 1195, Zhao was banished to Hengyang in the south of old state of Chu and died en route to his place of exile on the Xiang River. Now I'm showing you an anonymous, nearly contemporary hand scroll of the Odes of Bin in the Metropolitan Museum, New York. Zhao Ruyu was immediately compared to Chu Yuan. According to John Chafee's account of the events, Zhao's political fall and banishment created an uproar in the capital. Those who rallied to his defense, in turn, were punished with demotions and exile. Since overt expressions of grief were dangerous with Zhao's nemesis still in power, Zhu Xi and his students held private commemorations, and as a way to mourn Zhao's death, Zhu Xi wrote a commentary to the Chuzi. On falling leaves, he blandly commented that the line indicated an autumnal scene. Nonetheless, with these events in mind, and because falling leaves are so seldom depicted in Chinese painting, the hand scroll merits further study to determine if this small motif of falling leaves, you see these little leaves here, well, anyway, is innocent of secondary readings. Because of other messages tucked into the painting, I suspect it is not innocent at all. During the Ming Dynasty, a likely candidate for embracing the falling leaf imagery is the well-educated painter Tong Yin. After placing first in the provincial examination, Tong was embroiled in a scandal that was resulted in his being barred from participating in the bureaucracy for life. He turned to painting and writing for his living. Among landscapes attributed to Tong Yin is this meditation on reclusion. Tong Yin's poem describes a recluse tending his tea brazier and fishing pole. A group of contemporary colophons similarly talk about the pleasures of reclusion. Only a generation later did the Suzhou literatus and painter Zhu Jie introduce the themes from the state of Chu. He mentioned tear-stained bamboo and wrote, "Misty trees of the three Xiang rivers, autumn in the Nine Dao Mountains." Nine Dao Mountains were best remembered as the place where Xun was buried, and recalled the story of his wife's futile search for him, and by extension, the principled man's frustrated search for a great sovereign. You can ignore that. Okay. Depictions of the ladies of the Xiang. Now let us turn to the third strategy. Depictions of ladies of the Xiang, sometimes accompanied by her sister and sometimes alone. In the Nine Songs, a poem is devoted to each of the bereaved wives of Xun. Typically, the texts of the poems were transcribed and the illustrations focused on the figures or figure with only minimal description of other imagery, such as waves or clouds. But here we have empty branches. Right? This is a scroll in Boston. In the 19th century, a shift occurs in the treatment of the theme. This shift is seen in the work of the Shanghai artist Ren Xiong. Not only is the Lady of the Xiang shown, the falling leaves are also made visible. The leaves fall past the elaborately bedecked figure of the Lady of the Xiang. She stands looking disturbed, maybe a little angry. The connection of falling leaves and the Lady of the Xiang became as visible in painting as it had already been in poetry. A dramatic change in Chuzi annotations developed during the May 4th movement. One of the great tasks of Chinese intellectuals during the first half of the 20th century was to reevaluate traditional literature and its interpretations. The rationalistic Western critical tradition seemed more scientific and promised a break with superstitious mystification. In 1922, Huxer, a leader of the New Culture Movement, published an essay on how to read the Chuzi. He roundly condemned allegorical moralizing. Huxer and others who condemned these allegorical readings were highly persuasive. Today, the Chuzi is the focus of literary study as cultural artifact. The discredited annotations have virtually disappeared. It is not my aim to defend them. I just want to point out that you have to know them in order to make sense of these earlier paintings of the dynastic tradition. More than any other artist, Fu Baoshi painted the image of leaves falling to comment on social and political issues. During the height of the war raging in China, Fu Baoshi was living in Chongqing. At the end of 1943, he painted an image of the Lady of the Shang surrounded by a cascade of brown leaves. At the bottom, he wrote his discovery of this of the political illusion. Then he wrote that he always admired the mysterious poetic works of Li Gonglin and Zhao Mengfu and had long wanted to do such work. He says that when he and his wife read the poem at the end of 1943, they came to the lines "Wavering autumn wind, Dong Ting's waves, ah, tree leaves fall," and he says they were rendered speechless because it so aptly described their era. He further records that he used Gukaiju's masterpiece, Admonitions to the Court Ladies, for the design of the figure. The complaint conveyed by Fu Baoshi's Lady of the Shang presumably was aimed at the Japanese army. It may also have been intended as an admonition to the nationalist leadership. Fu Baoshi just painted dozens of these images, and now they're being imitated by the three different schools of Fu followers in Beijing, in Nanjing, and in the South. Okay, so then he had lots of opportunities for comment on society, the 100 Flowers Bloom movement that led to over 300,000 intellectuals being labeled rightists, effectively ending their careers, sometimes their lives, the Great Leap Forward that led to starvation of tens of millions. Of life in the 1950s, one intellectual observed, "There seems to be an invisible pressure which compels people to say nothing." The last image I want to show you is by Zhang Dachen. He imagined the Lady of the Shang in a ghostly manner that invites comparisons with the 17th century Komei portrait that Professor Wu talked about. She floats on clouds, her head and hands shrouded under a voluminous white robe. The inscription, which is dated 1973, records the line from the Lady of the Shang poem and refers to the key line and refers to 100 bodily ills that have not yet been cured. One doesn't know if he's referring to personal problems or to the nation's problems. In conclusion, using painting to allude to poetry that contained criticism was a practical form of political resistance because the protest was difficult to detect. This was especially true of the Lady of the Shang poem, where the barbs were in the commentaries, not in the poem itself. The commentaries allow one to express sentiments that perhaps were best not spoken. The government is unstable, the people are worried, petty men are managing affairs. Talent has been wasted. Thank you.